The following message is brought to you by MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. We are many stories made one family by one gospel. If you would like to connect with us, please check out our website at MacArthurBoulevard.org.
And if you haven't already, you can go ahead and make your way over to 1 Timothy chapter 5. If you're visiting with us, or newer to the church, we've been walking through this letter this summer. And we come to a text this morning that, honestly, I don't know that I've ever heard a sermon from this passage of Scripture, or even a lesson, but it's a really important text, and particularly when you come to it within the context of the whole letter. One key theme that we have seen surface within 1 Timothy as we've walked through it is that there is an inseparable relationship between doctrine and duty, right? An inseparable relationship between our Christian faith, what we believe about the gospel of Jesus Christ, and our Christian practice, namely how that belief actually transforms the conduct of our lives. And you can't separate the two, faith and practice, doctrine and duty. We've seen this and been reminded of this in 1 Timothy, that ethical living that is not rooted in gospel faith, the faith of Christ Jesus crucified and risen again, is not biblical Christianity. And conversely, having an orthodox faith that does not produce a transformed life in the practical, everyday matters of this world, likewise, is not biblical Christianity. We've seen that there is this inseparable relationship between what we believe, our Christian faith, and how we live, our practice, our Christian practice. We're going to be reminded of that again this morning. We saw a key verse several weeks ago in chapter 1, verse 5 in this regard, in this letter. Remember where Paul reminded Timothy, he said the goal, the aim, the purpose of our instruction, of our teaching, of our gospel faith, he said, was love. Love. Okay, so we're reminded biblical Christianity is not ultimately about attending a weekly service or merely your involvement within church programming. Ultimately, biblical Christianity is about how you love God and how you love God's people day in and day out. We're reminded of that again in this text. So as we get into chapter 5, we're going to see Paul is getting ready to address three subgroups of people, different types of relationships. He in our passage this morning, is going to talk about caring for widows. And then the next passage will be relating to church leaders. And then into chapter 6, he's going to deal with the slave-master relationship. And he's kind of doing the same thing in all of these subsections, is he is in each of them explaining how our gospel faith should be practiced in each of these types of relationships. Now, we're only going to focus on the care of widows this morning in verses 1 through 16, how gospel faith should be practiced in family relationships, okay? I want to give you the big idea of the text up front this morning that we'll then unpack together. The big idea of the text is this: our gospel faith should produce godly practice in family relationships. I'll say it again. Our gospel faith should produce godly practice within our family relationships. And as we walk through this text together, we're going to see three types of family relationships wherein we are to practice godliness. That is, apply, live out our gospel faith. Okay, now, before focusing specifically on the matter of widows and caring for widows within the church, before getting there, in verses 1 and 2, Paul begins more broadly, more generally. And it's there where we see the first type of family relationship where godliness is to be practiced. Okay, this is number one. Number one is gospel faith produces family relationships in the church. It produces family relationships in the church. So look at verses 1 and 2 in chapter 5. Paul talking to Timothy, he says, "Don't rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. Younger men as brothers. Older women as mothers. And younger women as sisters with all purity." So Paul says, Timothy, listen, there are going to be times in your ministry where you're going to have to offer a word of correction to people who are older than you. And he's not saying that Timothy should shy away from that responsibility. Remember the end of chapter 4, he had called Timothy. He said, listen, don't let anybody look down on your youthfulness, command and teach these things. In other words, walk in the calling, despite your age, that God has given you within the church. But here the reminder is, Timothy, as you do so, as you're walking in that pastoral calling and responsibility that you've been given, make sure you do so in the right way, with the right spirit, with the right heart. When you do have to approach an older member of the church, do so with honor, with the appropriate degree of deference and respect. Address them as you would your father and mother. Don't treat them like subjects under your rule, but instead relate to them as parents in the faith, in how you talk to them and relate to them and shepherd them. And he talks about his interactions not just with those older, but even with those younger. He says, when you talk to your younger brothers and sisters in the church, don't look down your nose at them because you're the pastor, with the spirit of superiority, as if they ought to hold you up on some pedestal. No, relate to them like you would your brother, like you would your sister. What I don't want you to miss is you're looking at this text, and particularly these first two verses, is the familial language that Paul is using to describe Timothy's relationships with these different segments of the church. Mother, father, brother, sister. It's reinforcing this identity, this corporate identity that we've already seen in 1 Timothy. Remember the key verse of 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, where Paul described the church as the household of God, the family of God. Guys, that is a statement of corporate identity. That is a "you are" statement. You are, we are a family. We're a household. The church is not primarily a club that you join and show up whenever you have time for it. It's not primarily even just an organization to be run. The Church of Jesus Christ is a family. I'm reminded of a great line Pastor Andrew shared with us when he was unpacking that text in 1 Timothy chapter 3. Do you remember what he said? He said, the church is not like a family. That's what we say sometimes. The church is like family. No. The church is not like family. The church, he said, is family. This is who you are. This is a statement of our corporate identity. This is the spiritual reality in Christ. And as is often the case in the gospel, the indicative always precedes the imperative. In other words, what you do for Jesus does not change your identity. It does not change who you are. Instead, it is your new identity in Jesus that transforms obedience. What you do for Jesus, how you live, flows out of this gospel reality, this new identity that we've been given in Christ. And so all of the commands and instructions of this text that we're going to look at this morning, they all flow out of that declarative statement, that identity statement of who we are. We are family. We are family. And so all Paul is telling Timothy here is treat each other like family. That's what you are. Treat each other like family. Gospel faith produces family relationships in the church. I want you to consider your relationships in the church. Within this church, many of you, most of you are members, part of this church. I want you to think about your relationships here. Do you see these people as family? Do you think about them, us, in that mental category of a family? And if you will think about us in that way, I'm telling you, it's such a blessing. It's such an incredible blessing, because some of you, I know, you don't have earthly mothers and fathers. Maybe you never knew your mom and dad, or maybe they've passed. But you know what you have in this church? You have spiritual moms and dads. I know for many of you, you live by yourself, or maybe you don't live around family. Your family's in another part of the state, another part of the world. Maybe you're newer even to America, and you don't really know many people here. And there's a lot of loneliness that goes along with that. There's a lot of relational gaps that leaves you here with. But do you know what you have in the Church of Jesus Christ, in this church, in MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church? You have spiritual brothers. You have brothers here. You have sisters here. You have spiritual children and grandchildren here. It's one of the greatest blessings that God has given us, that at least generally speaking, in the way in which Christianity is practiced in the American church, a gift that for many have been left unopened, unreceived. The gift of family within the church. So the exhortation here, this is the reality that's undergirding this entire text. And the exhortation is, open your life up to your church, your family. Open your life up. Open your home. Open your holidays. Open your celebrations. Open your sorrows. Don't be too busy for your family. Treat each other like family. Speak to each other like family. Relate to one another like family. And guess what? Just like any other family, we're going to have our differences. Those people don't agree with me on everything. We don't see eye to eye. Guess what? That's family. We still love each other. We care about each other. We recognize what holds us together is so much deeper than our differences. It is the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is what gospel faith produces. It produces family relationships within the church. Now, Paul's going to build on that in the rest of the text. And he's going to do so by talking about a particular way that we honor a specific part of the family, namely widows in the church. But while he's on the topic of widows and how the church is to care for widows, he's going to use this as an opportunity to talk about not just how widows ought to be honored in the church, but he's going to use it as an opportunity to give instructions on how widows are to be honored within their own earthly families. In other words, what we're going to see here is that our gospel faith should impact how we care for our aging earthly parents. And I'm going to extend it even beyond widows, because I think there are principles here that apply to our care for mom and dad when they get to a place in life when they need the care and help from their children. And so the second point I want you to see is this. Number two, gospel faith produces honor toward widows in our earthly families. We're going to talk first about our earthly family. So look at verse 3. He says, support widows who are genuinely in need. Now that word translated as support, other versions translated as honor widows. That's a better translation. The Greek word there is honor. It's the same word he's going to use when he gets to elders, when he gets to the slave and master relationship. He says, widows are to be honored. This part of the family is due honor. Now that's an instruction. Verse 3 is an instruction that he's given to Timothy for the church. That's an instruction to the church. The church should care for widows, honor, support, care for widows, Paul says, who are genuinely in need. And at least part of what he means by genuinely in need is these are widows who don't have earthly children or grandchildren still alive who are willing or able to meet those needs and to care for them, to support them, to honor them. And so in those situations, the church fills that gap because we are our family. So he gives that instruction, but then he digresses and he starts talking about how we treat earthly parents. He reinforces this consistent biblical message that if a widow does have living children, grandchildren, family who are alive and able to help them, support them, that it is the duty and responsibility of those children to care for their parents. In fact, at the end of verse 4, Paul says, in this way, children can, and he uses the word, repay their parents. And if you've been a parent long enough, you understand immediately what Paul is saying by that, right? I have no idea how much financial and emotional capital parents expend on their children. I went to Costco last weekend. I'm embarrassed to tell you how much, I'm not going to tell you how much we spent at Costco last weekend. And guess what? It's all gone. It's gone. They're not, they've been out of the house for 3 days and it's gone. And I wish we should have kept an account of it, like, so that when we get to where we need their help, we can just show them the bill that they have to repay. Like, we don't even have kids in college yet. I can't imagine. Okay. Now here's the thing. I know we laugh. Here's the thing. We, as parents, we pay, we give, we sacrifice, we provide, not begrudgingly, right? It's our joy. Our children are a blessing. They're not a burden, right? They're not a burden. It's our joy. It's our joy. It's our honor. It is our privilege to serve, to sacrifice, and to provide for them. And this is how God has ordered life, that there is a cycle of life. One day, as parents, we're going to get to a place in life where the one who has always been the provider will get to a place where they need to be provided for. They need the help. They need the care. And Paul says, you know who should be first in line to step up and to meet those needs are the children who have received so much from their parents over the years, to repay back just a fraction of what they have been given. And let me tell you, it's not a burden. to do so for your parents. It's not a burden. It's a blessing. And let me just say, if you are finding yourself as an older adult moving into a season of life where you recognize I need more care and help from my kids, I recognize, and I know this because I talked to you, that can be a hard transition. In the phrase I've had multiple, whether they're widowed or just older adults or not, tell me is I don't want to be a burden to my family. I don't want to burden them. And can I just tell you, you're not a burden. You're not a burden. It is an honor. It is a privilege. It is an incredible blessing from God to get to a place in life where as a child you are able to repay back just a fraction of what's been given to you. You're not a burden, you're a blessing to your family, even when you have earthly needs. Paul says here, he says, when children do this, when they meet this responsibility, he says it pleases God. He says, this is God's order, this is God's will, this is God's heart. In fact, look at verse 8, strong language in verse 8. He says, if anyone does not provide for his own family, especially for his own household, he says he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Tell us what you really think, Paul. Like, that's strong. In other words, what Paul is saying is there, even pagans get this. Like, even pagans understand that when parents get to a place where they need help, children ought to step up and help insofar as they are able to. You see unbelievers doing this. Listen, the love that flows out of our gospel faith should surpass the love that is exemplified in the rest of the world. If you're not loving people even to the degree that the rest of the world demonstrates love, Paul says, what good is your faith? He says, you've denied the faith. In other words, a gospel faith that does not work at home is a gospel faith that does not work. Okay, gospel faith produces honor toward widows in our earthly families. Now, I want to acknowledge that the application of that in our cultural context is going to look different than it did in a first century context. And we need to acknowledge that the principles remain, the principle of honor, the principle of love, but how those principles are applied is going to look different in a culture where there are 401ks, there's social security systems, there's in-home assisted living services, facilities, a number of different resources and systems that are available in our culture that weren't available in first century Ephesus. But the principle is still there. And the question we have to consider is, you know, how do I honor my aging parents given their specific needs and situations? And whatever that looks like practically, I want to remind you that honor and love are never practiced in a completely hands-off, disengaged manner. What I mean by that is, while there is absolutely nothing wrong with utilizing the resources, the systems, the resources that we do have available to us today, it's a reminder that we cannot ultimately outsource all of the care and the love that our parents need. We're reminded of God's heart in this passage. Do you see the heart of God here? We're reminded that God's heart is open toward those who are easily forgotten and neglected. God remembers those who are easily forgotten. Widows, the older generation, can be easily forgotten and neglected. But God doesn't forget them. God cares about them. And we practice godliness when we reflect God's heart toward the older generation. In fact, James said that this is pure and undefiled religion. Do you remember what he said? Yeah. Looking after orphans and widows in their distress. He says, you want to know what pure Christianity is? Yeah, it's loving the vulnerable. It's loving people who are otherwise forgotten and neglected. I do believe that there's applications of that principle beyond just how we treat widows. What we're seeing in this text is God's heart for the vulnerable, how we should embrace that same heart of care and love and honor, whether it's toward widows or abused women or single parents or orphans or the sojourner. Remember what Paul said. The aim of our instruction, the aim of our teaching is love. Are you loving? How are you loving? Gospel faith produces honor toward widows in our earthly families. I want to just, before moving on to the church specifically, I want to acknowledge just a unique challenge that some face in our culture that I don't know was as big of a challenge in a first century context, which is something that is known as sandwich generations. And this was brought to my attention even this last week as I was just thinking and talking to folks about this passage. Sandwich generations. A sandwich generation is simply acknowledging that in our culture today, many times folks are getting married later and having children much later in life. And so it's creating generations of people who have aging parents who are getting to a place where they need some support, some help, and some care, but they're getting to that place in life at the same time as also having young children living at home still that also need support and energy and care and attention. And so it's a sandwich generation of people who are sandwiched between those and oftentimes feel pulled in both ways, recognizing I want to love and honor both my parents and my kids, and oftentimes feeling like they're neglecting both to some degree or another. And I know there can be a lot of guilt and shame that goes along with that. And so I just want to say, if that's your situation, I want to remind you, God sees your heart. All right, God sees your heart, and that's what God cares about. He cares about the honor of your heart. He cares about the love of your heart. He's not, in this text, demanding a level of care that you literally cannot give. You may have to lean more on church family, on extended family, etc. The goal of this text is not to heap on feelings of guilt or shame or burden that you're not able to do more for your parents. The goal of this text is to exhort our hearts toward honor, giving honor where it's due, giving love where it's due. God knows your heart. God knows your heart in that. One final point here that Paul makes, understanding that there will be situations where a widow doesn't have children or grandchildren or family that is either able or willing to provide for them and help them and support them. And in those instances, that the church is to step in. And so this is number three. Gospel faith produces honor toward widows in our spiritual family, not just our earthly families, but also our spiritual families. The widow who's in genuine need, genuinely in need, that the church is to support, to help, are those who don't have earthly family that is able or willing to provide that support and need. And as he further defines what it means to be a widow indeed or those in genuine need, it's not just that they don't have earthly family who can meet those needs, but there's also an expectation that they have lived godly lives. This is the widow who is a widow indeed. And he describes that godliness a few different ways in the text. In verse 5, he describes these widows as those who have put their hope in God, who persevere in prayers and petition, who do not live self-indulgent lives. In verse 10, he describes them as widows who are known for their good works, and then he gives a number of different examples of what types of good works he's talking about. In other words, these are disciples of Jesus These are genuine, faithful disciples of Jesus who come to a place in life where they have needs and they don't have living children or grandchildren who are able or willing to meet those needs. And in those situations, Paul says the church is to step in and to provide and to help and to support, whether the need is financial or emotional or practical or relational. Now, particularly in verses 9 through 15, there are allusions to some system, a widow care system, that was evidently operating within this church in Ephesus that Paul is responding to in this letter in verses 9 through 15. And what makes these verses difficult to interpret and to apply and understand what's going on here is the reality is we don't really know exactly how this widow care system worked in Ephesus. We're just trying to piece together based upon what Paul is saying in these verses. Evidently, there was some type of widow's list or a widow's registry. Now, very likely, there were widows in the church who received support from the church who were not on the widow's list. In other words, you didn't have to be in the registry in order to receive help from the church. But those who were put on this registry, this list, evidently were widows who had made a pledge, a vow, to remain unmarried throughout the rest of their lives. And that pledge was rooted in a desire and an intention and a calling to devote themselves more specifically to the needs of the church, ministry within the church. It seemed to be at least a somewhat formal widow-led ministry that required a pledge to remain unmarried. And to qualify for that role, that ministry, this registry, Paul says you need to be at least 60 years old and you need to meet these other character qualifications that he unpacks there, which is why he then says, don't put younger widows in this role, in this ministry, on this list. Okay, he's not saying that younger widows should never receive help or care from the church, but he's saying don't let them enroll in this ministry that requires a pledge to remain unmarried throughout the rest of their lives, because what's going to happen is they're going to make this pledge with the best of intentions, and years are going to go by. They're so young in the prime of their lives, they're going to meet somebody, right? And they're going to want to get married. And then they will have to go back on their pledge. And Paul says, while there's nothing wrong or unbiblical or unfaithful about remarrying after a spouse dies, it is wrong to break a vow to the Lord, a pledge to the Lord. He says, furthermore, younger widows may be less mature. And so if they, throughout the remainder of their lives, and maybe a place of less maturity, are living off the income of the church, there's a temptation to fall into the trap of idleness there. Maybe they're going to start devoting themselves less to the ministry of the church and more to the ministry of gossip and rumors and the scuttlebutt, right? And he says, it's just not wise. And so he gives them counsel, you know, remarry, practice godliness in your new family situation. Now, it would be an unbiblical, I believe, it would be an unbiblical application of these verses to conclude that we should never support widows unless they make a vow to never remarry. I think it would be an unbiblical application of these verses to say that the church should never help or minister to or care for younger widows. I think it would be an unbiblical application of these verses to insist that every single local church have the same registry system, widow care, widow-led ministry system as was operating in Ephesus during this time, which would be difficult based upon the fact we don't even really know exactly how it operated. I think a faithful treatment of the text is to see the principle. Gospel faith produces honor toward widows in our spiritual family, not just our earthly family, but our church, the spiritual family of God. That when there is a genuine need that's not being met through an earthly family, that's where the spiritual family, that's where the church steps in. And the church meets that need. I'm gonna tell you something. I'm so blessed to be a part of this church. Many of you know, some of you don't know, I've been a member of this church for 17 years. I haven't been a pastor that long. That's a long time to be a part of a church family, though. And I thought on multiple occasions this week, studying this text, how blessed I am to have already had this text preached to me. Not in a literal formal sermon. Like I said, I don't think I've ever heard a sermon on this passage. But I've had this text preached to me by watching you, watching this family care for each other, love each other. In particular, the older generation. Watching people like Les and Jan Baker, like Cliff and Patty Clifton, people like Margaret Mahan, countless others of you who have served, have literally fed, fixed, transported, and helped. People in this church who were in genuine need. I can't tell you how many times I've gone on a visit to one of our homebound members. And this actually happened to me with Susan Cox just a little while ago. I walked in the room and the room was already filled with church members. I was like, well, am I even needed here? What an incredible blessing to be a part of a church family who recognizes the care of the older generation. It's not just the responsibility of the pastor and deacons. It's the responsibility of the church. You know why? Because we're family. This is who we are. This is who we are. If this is an area of ministry where the Lord is leading you to be more engaged in, caring for the older generation in our church, widows, our homebound members, I encourage you, a really practical way to respond is just get in touch with Tommy Riggins. Tommy, wave your hand. That's Pastor Tommy. Tommy and Ella do just a phenomenal job of caring for the older generation in our church, and not just doing it themselves, but they would love to help you get involved in that ministry as well. A great way to get connected there. Our gospel faith should produce godly practice in family relationships. That's the point. Honor your family. Honor your family. Your earthly family, your spiritual family. You know, we're a multi-generational church. That's another blessing about MacArthur Boulevard. We've got the old, we've got the young, and we've got everyone in between. And a church that's as multi-generational as ours, generational honor is really important. Okay? If you are a part of the older generation, it's important that you do not bemoan and criticize the younger generation. They do things differently. They talk differently. That's not how families act. If you're a part of the younger generation, it's really important that you do not demean or dismiss the older generation. You might learn something if you humble yourself, get to know them. It's not how families act. We're family. Lean into the family relationships here. Love one another, honor one another, be humble and learn from one another. Open up your lives and make time for one another, because a gospel faith that does not work in the family is a gospel faith that simply does not work. Okay? Guys, this is where our doctrine is tested. Miss me with your tight confessions of faith if you're not loving people well. Hey, the aim, he said, of our instruction is love.